Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Spitley, and I'm excited to talk about some personal training stuff here today, shifting a little away from training and psychology, going more into like the business side of personal training for you. And so to get started, here's a statistic that should really stop every new personal trainer in their tracks. And according to industry data, roughly 80% of personal trainers leave the profession within their first year. Not because they weren't passionate, not because they didn't know how to write a training program. They left because nobody prepared them for what actually happens when you step onto the gym floor, have to go get a job, have to create the training programs, use systems, have a certification, all those processes. So today I'm going to try to help change that. So whether you just happen to pass your certification exam, you know, you're 3 weeks into your first training job, you're trying to land your first training job, or, you know, you're a couple months into that training job and you're wondering if you screwed something up, you're trying to iron out the mistakes, this episode is ideally going to steer you in the right direction. So I'm going to try to walk you through exactly what you should expect, what you should prioritize, what mistakes will derail your career, maybe even before you really even get started. And this is the conversation that I wish someone would have had with me about 15-ish years ago or so. I think it would be very valuable. Clearly, I've managed to make things work considering my business is still running. It's what me and my wife do as a living. It's literally how we pay for stuff. It's how we support our family. So I like to think that we're doing all right somewhere. And so this is just some things that I kind of wish I would have knew early on. I think maybe I'd be further along. Maybe I would have gathered some better resources. Maybe I would have made some better connections. Maybe I'd still have even some clients from years ago, right? I mean, nobody is perfect. There's certainly some things that can always be improved upon. But I think if you're trying to break into the industry or you're trying to get your own clients, you're trying to really make a name for yourself, the goal of this episode is to try to be able to help you do that. And if you even have to be experienced, if nothing else, maybe this is just a good refresher course, light a spark underneath you to try to reignite some stuff, get some things going, help your business improve your actual training aspect of being a personal trainer and or a performance coach. So before I actually dive into the actual like tactical, hard meat potato stuff, I want to try to be honest with you about what I'm going to try to talk about, like these first quote unquote 90 days based upon what I have the title of the episode called. You know, I'm not saying this is going to be like a grace period. It's not like an orientation. I think this is a good foundation upon which you can actually build your entire career if you're new. And if you don't do really well here, it's where you could have a lot of turmoil, a big uphill battle, or if you're already established that doing 90 days of reflecting on things could actually elevate your business and help get you a little bit further along in terms of the personal training side. So I kind of want you to think about it in this way. This is kind of how I've laid this episode out here, is that in these first 90 days or 3 months, we're going to try to work on focusing on establishing a reputation, you know, your work ethic, your communication style, and most importantly, your client retention patterns. And these habits that you happen to build, whether they are good or bad, will eventually compound over time. So this is not what most certification programs are going to tell you. Certification programs are telling you, you know, how you program a squat. And that's maybe 20% of what actually makes you a good personal trainer or performance coach. But the other 80% is where the actual good stuff happens to actually being a quality trainer, especially in the private sector, from the business side, the interpersonal skills, the time management, the emotional intelligence, the ability to navigate the politics and whatever kind of facility that you happen to be working in. These all matter, and these are not things that are discussed in a certification packet, even at the collegiate level in terms of academia. So I've kind of structured the episode in these three phases or these first 90 days, each of these 30-day periods. You know, again, if you're experienced, you can just use these to kind of checkpoint where you're at and see where you can both improve. But basically that first phase or month is going to be kind of like your absorption phase. You're going to learn the environment, the systems, the people of kind of where you're at and where you might be practicing or even maybe where you're interning at. The second month is going to be more of your establishment-based phase. You're going to build your client base or at least attempt to continue to build it, refining your processes while you're doing that. And then the third month is going to be more of your optimization phase where you're going to identify what's working well, what's not, basically trimming the fat and setting yourself up for more long-term success. So let's kind of go into those phases now to kind of really kick this off. So your first month should be basically dominated, honing in on one thing, a lot less talking and a lot more listening. Using your ears and listening to what people are telling you and actually trying to absorb what you can. So especially if you're new, I know that you're more likely to be eager to try to like prove yourself how good you are, show everyone that you actually know your shit. But the trainers who succeed long-term are the ones who spend their first month or even maybe several months possibly as students, not necessarily the teachers. What I mean by this is that every gym has its own like ecosystem. There's its own culture. Some may have their own unwritten rules, you know, its own hierarchy of kind of how things work and operate. If you have to be the big box stuff, you know, the front desk staff, people that do the cleaning, the other trainers that you might be competing with, working and get with, the management team side of it. There's all these different relationships and dynamics that existed long before you walked in to be a personal trainer or before they hired you or before you're an intern. And so your job in the first month, regardless of kind of where you are in this ecosystem, is just kind of understand the ecosystem, get a feel of the lay of the land and how things work, and then watch how the most successful trainers in the facility that you're working in operate. And if you're not that person and you're kind of going independently, then you need to see what are they doing that is making them successful? Maybe you have talked to them about this, but what are they doing that's standing out that you can use on your own behalf of being a trainer? So not just the programming side. I'm really trying to stay away from the strength and conditioning programming side. You should have that down. If you don't, yes, it's the 20%, but it's going to be lots of people can write great training programs. You know, I could get on my Instagram account and find hundreds of people that I trust to write my training for me. That's not the problem. It's finding the people that I trust to listen to my feedback, if I was a client, listen to my feedback and are going to be a good fit with me, both from a communication style, the desire style, having the experience with maybe someone in my shoes, right? Those are all the things that I'm kind of looking for. But we're not talking about the programming side, we're talking about how they maybe greet their clients, how they handle transitions between their sessions, you know, how they interact with other people or other staff members, their bosses, if they happen to be in a facility that works that way, you know, what time they arrive, they watch how they handle maybe difficult situations at times. You're going to learn more from observing what happens in your first 30 days of either employment or trying to be a personal trainer in a big space or even in an internship-based process than you ever would in your entire certification aspect. And here's something that nobody tells new trainers is that your support staff can make or break your career. So if you happen to go to more of a bigger place or you're working underneath somebody, your support staff is really the people that would be like booking the sessions or selling them in that case. If you happen to be more in a very smaller based gym, how that process is streamlined and how easy it is for people to schedule, sign up, cancel, all those things. Those are the very small things, but those are the transactional pieces of the actual business. And if those are not smooth, that makes automatic friction when it comes to actually performing the training sessions. So again, the person that's, you know, greeting them or saying hello, you know, who's responsible for checking them in, who's responsible for signing them up for assessments or initial consults. You know, the first point of contact for many people is kind of setting the tone of their interest in training and how they're going to remember that. And if they like you, they're more than likely going to send prospects your way. And if they don't, they won't. So the relationship that you build with every single person at your facility does matter, whether that's members, whether that's clients, whether that's, you know, staff, admin, you know, owners. You want to have good relationships with everybody there. Now, every facility should have some kind of system. And so the from a scheduling side, billing side, assessment protocols, you know, if they you happen to be in a place where you got to check equipment out, you know, you need to make sure you understand the systems that are currently in place, if you have to abide by those, or you need to figure out how you're going to implement your own systems to streamline this so that the business side can run as much by itself as possible so that you can focus more on training. You're still going to have to do the business side, but you probably want to train people because you enjoy training people, not because you want to do the business side. So I've seen trainers, I've seen facilities struggle because they didn't really take time to truly understand how the scheduling software works or having things systemized. You know, they might double book clients, so they're still doing everything by pen and paper. They can't figure out how to easily reschedule. You know, they may be missing cancellation notifications. You know, these seem like small problems, but they're really not small problems because they will directly eventually cost you money, maybe damage your reputation, and at the end of the day, waste time, which is also money. So if you're trying to get the most that you can every hour that you're working and actually trying to make a living from it, those are important things that you want to consider, because if you're able to get two extra training hours a week because your systems, maybe three or four, because your systems are so optimized and everything runs the way it's supposed to, if you're charging $40, $50, $60, $70, $80, $90, $100 an hour, right, just multiply that up. Let's just say if you're working 4 hours at $50 an hour, right, that's $200 a week. That's $800 a month. Add that up over the course of the year, that's almost $10,000 that you're going to make extra from those 4 hours. So that can end up really snowballing if you try to take what seems like something very small and extrapolating it out over the course of 52 weeks. So something that you can do is you can make a checklist, right? You can learn the booking system that's in place inside and out. In that case, you want to understand what the cancellation policies are, where you're at, and how it's enforced, know exactly how and when you're getting paid, and how the cuts work. Fight for your cuts if you happen to be sharing stuff. Understand what equipment you can and can't reserve if you happen to be in a big spot, or how that happens to work if there's other trainings that your trainers that you're having to work around and with, because you may not know what they're scheduling. And also knowing just like general safety stuff, like emergency, where the exits are, all that kind of stuff. And then also knowing where every piece of equipment is that you would happen to use or program, right? You don't want to program, hypothetically, let's just say like a leg extension, and you don't know where the hell the leg extension is compared to another exercise that you're trying to superset with it. So also knowing the logistics of the training form, of the training floor, excuse me. So if you happen to be doing this by yourself, you know, you're just contracting out space, you're not in a big box system, then you also want to look at this from what kind of point of sale system are you going to use and scheduling system are you going to use? What kind of cancellation policy are you going to set up? What kind of late fees or failed payment fees are you going to set up? How is the payouts going to work? You know, are you selling sessions? Are you selling commitment times? Are you selling per week? You know, how are you going to do those? Are you doing half hour sessions, 45 minute sessions, 60 seconds, maybe 90 minute sessions, right? There's lots of different ways you can do that. How are you going to set those up if you're doing one-on-ones? You know, are you going to allow yourself some breathing room between those sessions? So if you're doing 45-minute ones, are you just going to bill them at the top of the hour? So you have 15 minutes to maybe do some paperwork, whatever. You know, just keep that all in mind in terms of what you're having to do. So it's definitely not the exciting portion of work, but it is essential work, right? The trainer who fumbles with this is really going to find that a client that's not very satisfied because you don't look like you're prepared. So if you're seamlessly navigating everything from the administrative side, you look professional and you're really trying to focus on the client experience, that's immediately going to make you look more valuable. It's also going to be able to let you probably be able to charge more because they're going to compare that to another experience they potentially had. And they're going to say, okay, that is a better value. Now let's actually talk about the training people portion. And if you're having a new place the first month or so, you're probably going to be working with a mix of clients if they're being assigned to you, and or if you're trying to acquire some, you're probably going to have a mix because you're probably going to try to take anything that you can get right off the get-go. You may even get people handed down from other clients. Maybe somebody's full. That's why you're brought on, and they're going to pass you on clients that they're trying to dwindle down to somebody new. Maybe they were offered a discounted rate. You're going to be the big spot to work with you. There could be a number of reasons, but maybe you need to perform some more initial assessments, or maybe you need to have a trial session to see if you're having a good fit. Those are all things that can potentially happen in that first month period. So here's my biggest piece of advice for training in the first month if you happen to be like in that big box or doing things on your own. Under-promise and over-deliver. So I see several trainers make this mistake more so than anything else in the places that I've been, is that they're usually eager to impress, that promise either crazy results, or they program overly complex training programs. They try to demonstrate how much they know by throwing advanced techniques at beginners or people that don't need those. And you want to resist this urge. Your job in the first month of employment or getting new clients or trying to acquire new clients is to build trust, not to impress. A client who has a great experience in their first session, second session, third session, whatever, however you kind of look at that initial kickoff portion of that client's experience, the client who feels overwhelmed, confused, or inadequate will find reasons to cancel, to not show up, to reschedule. Those that enjoy it will look forward to the next coming sessions. So you want to start conservative. You want to master your basics. The beautifully executed goblet squat progression that you have built in with good quality, clear coaching cues will do more for your client, more for your reputation, that complicated corrective exercise sequence that you can't fully explain, something you snagged off Instagram or TikTok that really genuinely doesn't really kind of make any sense. The next thing that you're going to do is you want to make sure that you document everything, every single session. You want to, if you, back in the day, I used to write stuff on the old school, notebook pads, and I would buy the ones with dividers, and each person would have their own divided part, and I would handwrite every single training program or training session as I went. So if they're 2 day a week person, 3 day a week person, basically on that sheet I would write down their 2 days, their 3 days, whatever it was, ideally how many sets and reps. Sometimes I would give ranges, especially if they were newer, as I try to assess where I think I can kind of push them to allow me some flexibility with them, because everybody's different. But that's how I started. And now, you know, I have things systemized at my gym currently. And even when I work with people online or hybridly, you know, I either use an app, like everything's much more systemized now in 2025 versus it was when I started training people in 2009, 2008, whatever that was. You know, things have definitely progressed. That's great. It makes things much simpler for us from a business side, but you still want to make sure that you're documenting everything. So, you know, obviously, the exercises you did, the sets, the reps, the weight, you know, you may write down what went well, what needs work. You might make some notes for that person so that way you can remember working with them, especially when we're talking about one-on-ones. How was your energy? You know, how was their mood? How was their energy? Did they mention anything important about life or outside the gym, scheduling conflicts, things that might be coming up, key things that can help you establish that connection, family, friends, animals, pets, trips, hobbies, all those little things, especially early on, can help you establish that good quality connection with that person. And then that documentation is going to be gold for moving forward. So then you walk into the next session or the third session or the fourth session or however many you start stacking them up, you can actually remember what they talked about, their daughter's soccer game, for example, or you know, you're now not just seen as the trainer, you're actually someone who actually cares about the individual in front of them. So they're going to see that you're tracking the sessions, you're taking care of the progressions for them, the sets, the reps, the weights, all the thinking is basically taking out of the equation from the training perspective. And then you can make side notes for your own help, especially on the one-on-one side of things that you can do. That's not my private model or bigger model. You may have to fly a little more on the cusp because you're going to have several people you're working with. You may not have as much time to be able to do that, but you might just try to always remember one quality thing about that individual that you can continuously bring up to discuss, and they'll kind of walk you through the way the conversation is going to go likely for the future sessions if you just remember one thing that they happen to have that light bulb moment, or you can see in their eyes something that they're passionate about, that they're talking about. Those are all great things to do, but you also want to make sure you document that stuff, but also that you're documenting anything from a legality perspective. If you need to get any kind of liability forms, injury forms, assessment forms like that early on in those initial assessments, you want to make sure that you're getting those taken care of as well. That kind of falls underneath that document everything. So I'm going to talk about some now mistakes, shoot off some rapid fire things that I see newer trainers tend to make. First one's going to be talking too much during the sessions. You know, you're probably going to be nervous. You're trying to break the ice, fill the silence, whatever you want to call it. So you either over-explain everything or you talk too much about yourself. Your client doesn't want a need or a biomechanics lecture or lesson. Now, if they haven't asked, that's one thing, but you don't need to break that stuff down for them. More than likely, they do not give a shit. They just need good quality, clear, concise coaching cues with enough space to focus on the movement. Typically, I say start with one or two coaching cues, just in general, regardless of how you coach, but especially in the early on sessions, give them one or two things to focus on and be able to perform that movement, and then just let them do their thing. The body will figure itself out. You don't want to talk too much. Do your best to lead them into talking about something else. If you're going to ask questions, ask open-ended questions, not questions they can say yes, no, maybe, I don't know. Those are terrible ways to create conversations. Open-ended questions does well for them. What did you do this weekend? Is much better than, did you have a good weekend? They're either going to say yes or no. 99% of people are going to say, yeah, I had a good weekend, even if they didn't have a good weekend, because they don't want to tell you had a bad weekend. But if you say, hey, tell me about your weekend. What'd you do? Now they can at least open up. And then that might lead down to, why was it a bad weekend? Okay, here's something you can talk about. Maybe you can relate with that, right? Those are things that make you actually seem more human to them. All right, mistake number two is not having a backup plan. Okay, basically what I mean by this is that you need to be able to have your proper progressions and regressions of your exercises, because sometimes stuff does happen. But also, if you happen to be sharing a space or the gym is incredibly busy, equipment might be taken, they may be short on time, spaces get crowded, you know, your program workout basically doesn't work as ideal, and that's okay, it's going to happen. So you should always be able to flip the script like that really quick. Know what you're going to do. Either mentally, once you've done this long enough, it's easier to do it on the fly. But if you are a beginner, you might actually list three exercises, something we do very commonly with athletes that I work with that I think have the experience, but they tell me they squat at school, but I don't know what that means. So I'll have a squat progression in place of three different progressions, and we'll kind of just start off with the first one. If it looks great, it's a home run, their goblet box pile looks freaking killer, great. We're just going to move on to a goblet squat without the box. Okay, that works great. Guess what? Next week, we're going to push a front squat. Okay, and there's going to be other people where they got to live with that box squat for a while to get it down before we can move on. Everybody's different. As long as you have that planned, you can adjust much quicker than if you don't have a plan in place. All right, mistake number three is being afraid to say, I don't know. Okay, you're not going to have every answer immediately as a beginner. Even as somebody that's been training someone a very long time, there are still times where I have to tell clients, I don't know. You may have some kind of weird injury thing going on, especially working with youth athletes, that I've got to sit and marinate for a little bit and actually genuinely think about, what can we do for your training program today to get you moving forward and still work on what we can without doing harm? Sometimes those are hard questions to have, especially on the fly. But it's always better for you to say something like, instead of saying, I don't know exactly, hey, that's a great question, let me look into that and get back to you, than actually just like make something up because you actually don't know it. Let them know that you're actually going to do some research on it. Maybe you're going to have to look into it. Maybe you're going to have to make a phone call. All acceptable, especially if you're talking about the sports world like myself. Mistake number four is going to be neglecting your own fitness. Now, I don't see this as much anymore, but still, it still irks me to see people that work in our industry that don't take care of themselves. You're now actually trying to train people for a living, so you need to maintain that on your own side and schedule your own training, like your own appointments, whether just taking care of your health, whether you're trying to be more athletic, you're trying to lose some weight, you're trying to build some muscle, you're trying to be stronger, you compete in powerlifting, weightlifting, bodybuilding, strongman, whatever it is. I do think you gotta walk the walk. Okay, you gotta show them that you do it too. You can't just train people and be a lazy bum. You gotta actually do some of the stuff. And if nothing else, it's great because you can try new shit on yourself. And you can actually do it for a training block or for a couple weeks. See how it feels. What do you need to know how to adjust so that when you actually try to implement it with somebody else, it doesn't look like you've never done the exercise before. So that's kind of a twofold one there. Two for one. Number five, don't compare yourself to other established trainers, gyms, fitness facilities. A trainer with a lot of clients, a lot of experience, or maybe is in high demand, has likely been doing it for years, maybe even decades. If you are new, you've been doing this for days, maybe months, maybe half a year at the absolute most. You're at different stages with different standards. I know the way that I started training people at Purdue when I actually first started truly making money training people, and I look back and I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. So just remember that you're probably not going to be the best right off the get though, and that's okay. Don't compare yourself to them. Everything will be fine. Do the best that you can and then learn from those people. And chances are, if you're doing these things right from the get-go anyways, you're actually going to take a lot away from the get-go. All right. Let's go to the second aspect of this, which is going to be like after your first month if you haven't been newer. So let's say you've made it through that first month, 30 days of employment or doing your own thing. You're actually understanding the environment, where you're at. You've got some systems in place. You've actually started to build some relationships. Now let's try to actively grow and see if we can compound this to actually kind of get some momentum moving forward. And the reality of personal training is the economic side, is that you need a certain number of sessions per week to actually make a livable income. It's just a giant math equation at the end of the day of what it is. And that number is obviously going to vary based upon where you live, your training rate that you have, your experience, which is going to determine the rate that you're able to charge. Somebody that has much more experience can justifiably charge more than somebody that is brand new. So if you are new, your rates should not be up there with some of the top trainers in your local area, but you also at the same time don't want to be the cheapest either. You know, it really also depends on your model and how you're acquiring them. You know, if you're doing small group training, say two or three people, you're going to be able to charge less per person. But if you can get that filled up, that means you can possibly make more per hour than the top person charging one-on-one. So that's all going to matter as well. And then you also need to understand, you know, if you're an employee or an independent contractor, and then also your personal financial situation. But whatever that number is, you need to be intentionally working towards that number. You're always trying to get, there basically should be a very high point. And then there's a bare minimum is probably where you're going to start from your first year of ever training people. And basically, you should never go backwards on that scale unless if you know how your business model changes, but it's still going to compound differently of how you'll be able to make that income work. But the most effective client acquisition strategy in your first 90 days, 6 months, even whatever you call it, is just going to be your floor presence or actually being available. And especially in the big box places, if you happen to be working in a smaller community or like you're contracted, you're doing your own thing, you're basically renting, quote unquote, renting space. Being in the gym is important and it really stinks to be there with nothing else to do. But that's where you should train. That's where you should spend your time. You should be visibly accessible and you should be able to answer questions. Those are things that help. Maybe you're filming content in today's society and the way it goes. That's one way to actually be present, but it should actually be gym floor time. That's what I did at Purdue. People knew me as the guy that worked the rec, and it was a lot easier for me to work with people because I was a constant face that was always there. First, if I would have been just sitting in a different building doing homework, probably not getting me anywhere. At least I can do my homework there, or I can, you know, hang out there. Basically, you don't want to hide in an office. You don't want to be sitting over there on your phone, not really paying attention. You want to be actively present, approachable, and helpful if you're able to do that. Social media makes that a little bit easier today, I will say. As long as you can be social media accessible, it is making it a little bit easier to work with people and kind of get your name out there, especially on the Facebook side of things. But if you happen to see somebody, especially on the bigger gym side, struggling with something, setting something up, you can offer them a quick tip, walk in to help them set up their bench, you know, give them a quick little tip. Maybe if you finish a session with a client, don't immediately just disappear and go home. Maybe stick around for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Maybe you go down and wipe down the equipment that you guys had used. You know, maybe you just get in a 10, 15 minute walk on the treadmill just to kind of decompress and still actually be there. You know, when you're doing your own workout, if you can do it during busier hours when potential clients could potentially be there for bigger gyms. Otherwise, that doesn't really matter if you're in just like a smaller community, but I do think it's still important that people see you actually train there, that you're taking care of yourself there. That also will help you get some buy-in. And then every interaction on the gym floor is actually a potential client relationship at some point. Maybe not that individual person, but that individual person may know somebody that knows somebody that's looking for personal training. Okay. And not because you're pitching everyone. You definitely don't want to do that. Don't go up to everybody just blindly trying to sell your services. I think that's really dumb. And I don't think it's a good, it's just very snake oily, I guess is the best way for me to put it. You just want to make sure that you're demonstrating that you're competent in what you're doing on the gym floor, that you're approachable, that you actually are genuinely trying to help people. And people want to work with trainers that they've actually seen that. Trainer seems knowledgeable. People seem kind. They seem like a real person. It makes you much more desirable. And before anybody wants to actually do anything with you, they have to like you. Even if they don't know you, they have to like you. If you just look like an asshole, slamming weights, doing stupid shit, nobody wants to hire that. So just keep that in mind, especially if you happen to be one of my strength sport friends. If you're trying to hire strength sport athletes, you're probably working with online, don't see too many one-on-one personal training clients that are powerlifters, right? So just keep that in mind too. And here's a strategy that I think is incredibly effective but underutilized is asking your current clients for referrals. I will be the first to tell you, I'm not even great at this. I have a hard time being able to figure out a way to spark this conversation after doing this for 15 years. It's very hard to just ask somebody. But the best thing in the way that I have found to do it is if they're having a great experience, they've came for a year or two, if you happen to be more experienced, obviously, at this time. But let's just say hypothetically, you know, you're 2 months in with an individual client and they're actually having a good time. They've lost some weight. Everything's going great. They probably know other people that could benefit from your services. They probably also hang around with people that are in the same income area, which means they probably know people that can afford your services. So it's just a simple of, hey, if you happen to know anyone that's looking for a trainer, I'd love to help them out. Or you could happen to say, hey, you've seemed to make awesome progress. I really like how hard you work. You happen to have anybody like you that would be interested in training as well. And that looks like that circles around as a compliment back to them of, hey, you're doing a good job. You're an awesome person. You're a great client. I like being around you. I want to be around more people like you. That makes them feel good. And then they try to think about people that they hang out with that they want to seem a lot like, that they see as compliment. They're not going to give you a shitty person because they don't want to look like that shitty person. So it's a little bit of reverse psychology upstairs in getting them to feel good about themselves. Find somebody else that aligns with how you train people and how they are. And then also, again, going back to that income side of someone being able to afford your services because they're probably going to hang out with somebody in a very similar income-based area. All right, so month two is also when you should be critically evaluating your own training process, kind of taking a step back, looking at things, what's working, what's not, what are some of the friction points that maybe you're having from the business side or even on client side. So let me give you some specific areas that you can assess. First of all, it's going to be your assessment protocol. Is it too long? Is it too short? Are you gathering information that you actually use to write your training programs to establish a relationship? You know, are you missing important information? The good initial assessment should be thorough enough to program effectively, but also streamlined enough that it doesn't feel like it's a medical exam. I will admit our assessment process is rather detailed compared to most places I've been. I've seen them not an assessment process at all. People walk in, they literally make something up on the fly as a training program. And there's also some that you have every joint angle possibly measured. And I don't know what you're going to do with that. We kind of try to split that down to where we use different movement stuff. We gather some hip and shoulder range of motions. We do some quick low back tests, some quick shoulder tests to make sure we avoid impingements and things like that. And then really at the end of the day, then we move more towards the performance side in terms of the performance testing, and then just make sure the health history looks good. And then we just kind of have a conversation of what goals look like we're trying to get after. And then as we've watched them move, kind of figure out where our fundamental movement patterns are that need addressed and can be improved. And then how we create that training program from their goals, how many days a week and all that kind of stuff. Now, your session structure, you should be asking, you know, how are you having your clients warm up? Or how are you having them do a cool down? You know, how are you handling the transitions between the exercises? Are there dead time where clients are standing around waiting for equipment or not doing anything? Every minute of a session should feel purposeful. And this is something that the semi-private model, I think, really capitalizes on, is when you teach people how to actually train, they can eventually warm themselves up. They can eventually do their own cool downs. They can set their own stuff up. They can put their own stuff away. You're actually there coaching, writing the training program, establishing the connection, and guiding the training session rather than actually doing every single thing. Now, if you are doing one-on-ones, then you are going to be much more responsible for all that other stuff, walking through the warm-ups or cool-downs or whatever. And we do some sporadic one-on-ones now at my facility in our dead times. And Adrian's the one pretty much taking those. And I do some of them at a place that contracts us out. And that obviously, those are much more hands-on. But I'm also making more per hour, or she's making more per hour. So you also have to kind of take that into account as well, in terms of how your training protocols and everything are lined up and what your expectations are for the clients. So I think that's also important. But I think a really big key thing that you understand here is that every minute of every training session should feel purposeful to the client, should not feel like I'm wasting my time. If you're ever feeling like that, find something that they can do, whether it be a corrective exercise, a mobility exercise, something for shoulder health, hip health. They have something going on, if nothing else, extra abdominal work, something that makes them carry or push something that keeps them actively engaged. And while it may not make the most scientific training principle sense from what you learn in school or how training's laid out, if the client is busy and happy, that's part of the battle. It's just part of the way the business works. In terms of your communication side, are you checking with clients between your sessions? Like, are you okay with text messaging? Is text messaging okay? Emailing? How is that working if you are okay with that? Are you responding to their questions or scheduling issues if you happen to do that portion of it? Are you doing that in a prompt manner? Is it professional? Are you providing any kind of resources, homework, maybe some nutrition guides? Maybe you're giving them a mobility thing to do at home if they happen to be sore. Are you recommending, you know, foam rolling techniques that they could be doing at home? Or if they happen to have a treadmill at home, are you giving them any extra cardiovascular zone 2 work on a day or two off that they can actually do stuff at home? Those are all things that, you know, just depends upon what kind of level of service you're providing. But those are all other things that you can do. The client that is going to feel connected to you even between your sessions is going to be far more likely to stay long term than if your training sessions just merely feel transactional. It feels like you're more invested in the full approach of whatever their goals are: gain strength, build muscle, lose weight, combination of all those things. The better you are to likely keep them long term. On the scheduling front, are you clustering your sessions effectively? So if you are doing one-on-ones, are you able to pool and pod some together so they're not just completely spaced out randomly? If you're not that way, you're doing semi-private and the scheduling is done by them, is that smooth and seamless process for them? Are they doing okay with that? I find that newer and less experienced trainers usually end up with more scattered schedules. Some of that's because they just don't have enough clients to have, so they got to basically take everyone they can. But also do your best to just bunch them together. Offer what you can first and foremost, what you have. So what I mean by that is, for example, if you've got somebody at 6, for one-on-one perspective here, if you've got someone at 6, offer them, someone's asked, hey, what can you do in the morning? Yeah, hey, I can do Monday at 7. Bring that to them first. Give them the option, or maybe 5. Give them the option that's going to work best for you first and make them say, no, I can't do that. I have X. Because they might say, yeah, I don't have an obligation. Sure, let's do that. Rather than like, yeah, let's do Tuesday at like 8 o'clock. I wouldn't have to be at the gym on Tuesday at 8 o'clock, right? I don't have somebody till 11 or noon that day. You know, you don't want to have those big gaps if you can avoid them. It's exhausting. It's also financially inefficient. So you want to try to work towards those blocks. And as I'm sure you know, if you're getting into this industry, if you've been in this industry, we know the majority of the business kind of comes in these chunks anyways. You're usually going to have your early morning risers. You're usually going to have your evening or after work people. Those are going to be your two biggest time zones for personal training. And then you will occasionally have these mid-afternoon people that are able to get away maybe from 11 to noon or 1. That's kind of like 2-hour window. You might be able to block some people that can actually get away for lunch, especially if they happen to be like a salaried employee. That's something else that you consider to try to snag a share of the market as well, if at all possible. Not as popular, but if you happen to be in a big market or access to a big market, it is much more accessible to be able to do. And then you also want to think critically about your client's experience. Try to put yourself in their shoes from the moment they walk into the door to train with you to the moment that they walk out to go home. How was their experience on a 1 to 10 scale? Give yourself an honest litmus test of how you did, but also how you think they would rate that training experience. Where could it be better? Just very small improvements. Like, don't try to overhaul the thing. Just find one thing. Maybe it's merely if you offer a free bottle of water for their training session, you actually bring the bottle of water to them, right? Hey, can I go get that for you? If it happens to be they're in the gym and just by themselves, like, you know, for me, and they kind of have like a music preference, especially in the morning, I try to find some music that goes with that one or two people that I have in. You can make a debate that when it comes to training, if somebody can figure out a training playlist that will make everybody happy, you would be a millionaire. No question about that. But try to find something that can keep majority of the people satisfied, and or if you're doing one-on-ones, you know, that's something they actually like. And then obviously always saying hi and bye with their actual name. And then that's going to compound into basically an overall premium experience and let you foster a better relationship that way. Now, another thing is worth considering and talking about, which I think a lot of people are hesitant to talk about, is handling challenges. And as you get going, especially second or third month in, it's where the initial excitement starts to wear off and there's actual challenges on the training front from different aspects here. So you might have your first client cancellation or no-show. You might have a client who isn't seeing results as quickly as they wanted. You might face scheduling conflicts, maybe even difficult personalities. You know, somebody's very, very pushy or very into themselves or very, very demanding. So let's kind of talk about client retention specifically, because this is where I think a lot of trainers really struggle. That research on gym membership behavior shows that the first 8 to 12 weeks are the highest risk period for dropout. The excitement fades away, results aren't dramatic yet, and life's usual demands start competing for time and money. Everything starts to compound here. And so our job as trainers and coaches is to get clients through this danger zone. And we do this by creating, one, accountability, two, demonstrating that they've made progress or being able to show them that they've made progress, like actually on paper or through the scale or through pictures that they maybe are taking, and building the genuine connection along with that. And the accountability piece of this is going to be clear expectation and consistent follow through. So the client cancels, reach out, not in necessarily like a pushy way, but actually in a I care about you way. Hey, notice you didn't make it to today's training session. Is everything all right? And then they will respond, typically. Sometimes people just need to know that, hey, you noticed they weren't there. They didn't show up. Wasn't like them. You reached out to them first. And that's going to make sure that there's a connection portion there. From a demonstrating progress on this front means actually tracking and celebrating small wins. You'll hear this all the time in the fitness industry. Celebrate small wins. And the scale may not have moved, maybe a pound, maybe a two if they're trying to lose weight, if they're trying to gain weight, maybe only a pound, maybe two, right? Maybe their arms aren't a little bigger, maybe they're not ripping that shirt yet. But are they actually lifting some heavier weights? Are they moving better? Has their sleep improved? Do they feel like they have more energy? Find those wins that actually make them feel like they're visible. Like you notice them as a trainer, and then they can sit back and think, yeah, I do feel better. I am sleeping better. I do have more energy. You're right. I am goblet squatting 50 pounds and not 20 pounds anymore. You know, those are, again, small wins, but they will demonstrate progress. And for us, we have clients write down their weights. This is a big piece of why. One, we want them to know where they're always at, because they will forget. They're not going to remember what they goblet squatted or what they dumbbell rowed or what they, you know, pushed on the sled. They're never going to remember that. We as trainers can many times remember that much better than they can. But I'll be honest, I can't remember half of my training stuff that I do anymore. I still track my stuff old school. So that portion of it is once they remember, but two, when they see that, hey, week one, I was using that 20-pound dumbbell, and now I'm on week four, and I'm using the 50-pound dumbbell, that's pretty huge. That's pretty substantial. That is a light bulb moment, and that lets them celebrate those small wins. And then, obviously, like we've kind of talked about, building actual, genuine connection actually means caring about them as a person, not just as, again, the transactional revenue that's happening from their wallet to yours. Remember things that they're going to tell you. Ask follow-up questions when you're having discussions about things. Be interested in their lives outside of just the gym. Get to know them again as an actual person. And the trainer-client relationship is a real relationship, and people don't leave trainers they're genuinely connected to. It's very rare that you'll find somebody establish a connection and then choose to go somewhere else. Pretty rare. All right. Now let's kind of talk about the last 30 days of this piece. If we're talking about this 90-day transformation aspect, you've got your first 2 months in, either, again, employment-wise or doing your own thing. You've got some data. You've got some real experience. The third month is about using that to actually finally optimize everything. So start with your numbers. How many sessions are you doing per week? You know, how many hours are you training? What's your show up rate? What's the percentage of scheduled sessions that are actually happening? So if you're booking 30 sessions in the week, are you having 90%, 80% people show up? What's your retention rate? You know, how are you losing lots of people and gaining new ones? Are you sticking with the same people consistently and not seeing a whole lot of turnover, which is ideally what you want? What's your average client lifetime? How long do they typically train with you for before they stop? Usually after 90 days, you start to gather this. Now, I will admit this needs to go out much further, in my opinion, much further, especially as a business that has a three-month commitment. Even though we do have a surcharge, if someone does want to stop early, it's fine, but there is a surcharge for that. So those numbers will give you data and actually let you know how things are going. So for me personally, if they are not showing up 90% or more, then you've got a reliability problem. You need to have a genuine conversation with that person that, hey, showing up is a big piece of getting the progress and getting the return on investment from what you're doing. Big piece, especially somebody that works with youth athletes, especially if they only choose to come one day a week. You've got to come one day a week. If you miss 1 week in 12 weeks, you've missed like 8.5%. Okay. Missed two sessions in that time, you've missed 16%, maybe 17%, whatever that is. I'm not that great at those math numbers. That's substantial. Okay. You got to be damn near perfect. But the more you actually train, you do 3 days a week and you only miss one day a month, out of those 12 days, you're still over 90%. So you get a lot more wiggle room with more sessions. So those of your clients that have that lower show rate, you need to definitely make sure that you're kind of on them on that and explain how that portion of it works for the results. If they're not prioritizing their sessions or your scheduling reminder systems that you're using, or you know, your no-show stuff, be on top of that. If they're leaving after 6 to 8 weeks pretty consistently, something's breaking down at that point. So if you can notice that people are stopping to come at certain periods, that could also be seasonal too, but especially from the initial get-go that we're talking about here, something is changing upstairs. Could be that the programming is beginning a little boring, a little stale. Maybe they feel like they're doing some repetitive stuff. Very possible. That's why we kind of update our programs every 4 weeks. It is just enough that people start to kind of get bored with it. They get something fresh, something updated, something more challenging. It's a new spark. It brings them back to life and keeps them going forward. Maybe the relationship's not deepening. You're not just creating a deep enough connection with them. And maybe the results are plateauing and they're having some issues there too. So figure out what's going on at those points if you happen to notice that. And then just be honest with yourself with what the data shows. It's not about being judgy about it. It's actually trying to find what the numbers are telling you so you can try to improve them. That every successful coach and trainer that I know obsessively tracks some kind of metrics like this. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to have everything dialed down to like a stupid T. But they do know who are their people that constantly show up, who are the people that constantly cancel, who are the people that constantly get hit with no-shows, you know, who are the people that are likely to come back for 2 or 3 months at 1 day a week, and then they'll stop, and then they kind of just ride this roller coaster up and down. You'll eventually learn who those people are. That's not a hard pattern to pick up. All right, and also, by basically this third month time frame, you should be able to start to notice patterns. What types of clients do you work best with? What populations energize you? What kind of populations do you energize? What problems do you find yourself solving repeatedly? Like you're seeing a lot of the same assessment issues, or you're having to program a lot of similar exercises, and you're seeing a lot of the same issues from your assessment stuff that you're noticing in a particular population. This is the beginning of finding your niche. And while you don't need it to have it completely figured out by, you know, 90 days or, you know, as you're starting your training journey, you should be gathering information to kind of figure out what you're good at and where's an area that you can begin to corner for your own. So maybe you discovered that you actually do like working with beginners, people that haven't done strength training before on the personal training side. There's something satisfying about introducing those people to strength training for the first time, getting them fired up. Maybe you found that you connect particularly well with people in their 40s, 50s. They are trying to stay as active as they age. They're kind of buying in. They're realizing this is actually important to them. They're beginning to think about the next 10 years. And maybe you've also realized that athletic performance is what actually lights you up. You should pay attention to those. The trainers who build the best successful long-term careers usually are specialists, not generalists. You don't need to turn clients away who don't fit your niche, but you should be thinking about who your ideal client is and doubling down on that and how you can attract more of them over time. And my business is a great example of that because about 70 to 80% of our revenue from a training perspective comes from athletic performance. It's in our freaking name of our business. Terre Haute Intensity Resistance and Sports Training. Most people see that and they think, oh, Thirst only works with athletes. Well, actually, we do have personal training clients. We do have an adult fitness program. Yes, we work with those people. We help those people get results. We don't advertise super hard on that population. I do think we should probably advertise a little bit stronger in that area, if I'm being honest. But we clearly don't turn someone away, right? I worked with a client recently that was new, and that's does personal training. Everything's great, Kusher. Everything's awesome, right? It's not like I turned their business away because they're not an athlete. In my opinion, we train everyone somewhat like an athlete. We keep them moving and active. But clearly, we have cornered a niche in our area of being the best and go-to place in our area for athletic performance, bar none. On the professional development side, the third month is also where you start to establish that professional development and more as a habit that you're maybe you're certified, maybe you've got a degree, whatever. It's got you in the door, but your continuing education will always separate you from the pack. It doesn't mean that you have to spend thousands of dollars to do this right off the get-go, but you should be reading. You should be listening. You should be learning constantly. You should be looking at some of the evidence-based practitioners and research if you can on some places. You can look at research reviews, watch free podcasts and educational-based stuff over on YouTube. Be cautious on who you get that from. You could try to find professional communities, maybe like on Discords and things like that, maybe school, something relatively cheap that you can bounce ideas from. Obviously, if you went to school with other people, that's another one too. Make sure that you're kind of intertwined with those people so that you're always locked in. And then also find a mentor. This could be somebody that's been training people for a decade or more that you know. It's someone that you happen to have met maybe at a workshop or like a powerlifting seminar or something like that. it's going to be someone that you've connected with online through Instagram, and you've managed to maybe have a couple conversations here and there, and you kind of just spark things off and actually have a more professional relationship that way. But having someone who's been where you are and can provide you guidance, ideally free, but guidance and a little bit of a nudge when you need it, is pretty invaluable. And you shouldn't be afraid to ask, because most experienced trainers and coaches remember what it was like starting out when they did it and are usually willing to help. And that's the big thing that we try to do with our internship program, is that we try to make sure our interns know that they should always come back to us and ask us questions and get help from us. There are ones that don't. They move on and we just don't happen to talk to them a whole lot anymore. And it really stinks, because to me, that feels like transactional. They used us to basically graduate and move on. That's going to happen at times, but we do our best to hire interns that we can tell not only genuinely want to learn, but want to be connected with us long-term. And why I always do hope that this is the point that Thirst can get to, where we can have at least one full-time coach. It is a long-term goal. It is an uphill battle being self-employed in a small market. But that's who we want to hire from. I don't want to hire Joe Blow that I've never met from, that's been training somebody at the dinky gym down the road. I don't want that. I want somebody that's been in our community, understands how our business works, has helped us grow, has helped us foster relationships. Those are things that are valuable to me and my wife. And those are things that we try to find in our interns as well. And we want them to know as well that we are there to mentor them as well. We provide as much free resources as we absolutely possibly can through our 500-hour internship. I feel like that's the bare minimum that we can do. I do feel that we have done above and beyond of making that internship something that is actually valuable, that when they do it, they're going to take something away and it will meaningfully impact their career so long as they choose to use it. But make sure you find a mentor. That's the short and dirty of that. Now, setting up the following 3 months, let's say quarter, it's time to figure out and zoom back and plan a little bit bigger. What do you want the business to be like in the next 90 days? How many clients do you want? How many do you think you can handle? What kind of income is going to make you happy? How are you going to be able to justify raising your rates? What do you want your average day to look like Monday through Friday? What skills do you want to develop that you possibly don't have that may be able to let you gather a couple clients in different areas because you've just pumped the brakes, or maybe you've passed on them and said, hey, I don't think I'm the person for you right now, which that's one of the best things that you can do as a trainer or a coach. If you don't have the experience to tell someone that, they're going to see that as very valuable and very respectful to them. But write those down. Be specific. You don't want to say, I want more clients. That's not a goal. I want to be training 20 sessions per week with my clients showing up above 90%. That is an ideal goal. That will give you like concrete numbers that you can work for and establish. And then think about what support you need to make that happen. You know, do you need to work on your marketing? Do you need to improve a specific training skill? Do you need to adjust how your schedule is? Maybe you need to get up an hour or two earlier to start taking on some 5 a.m. clients. Not ideal, but maybe that will let you not have to be at the gym so late. And you can maybe make the same amount of money, if not more. Do you need to have a conversation with like your boss or other trainers that you work with about growth opportunities, networking, things like that? The trainers and coaches who build real careers are the ones who are actually going to treat it like a business as soon as they walk into it. So not just showing up to train whoever happens to like walk through the door, you're trying to actually build something valuable and intentional and taking it seriously. Next, I want to take just a small moment though to talk also something about called imposter syndrome, which I think every new trainer experiences, but very few people talk about openly. That voice deep back in your head that says that you're not qualified enough, you don't know enough, everyone can tell you're new, you're going to get found out. That voice is lying to you, but it's also completely normal. Very common, especially starting off, that you're going to tell yourself that you're not good enough, you're not adequate enough to do this. If you've earned your training, if you've earned a certification, you've earned your degree, you You've done an internship. You have a tour. You've done all those things that other people have not done. Then you know more about exercise science than the average person. And probably most importantly, you know more than your clients need you to know to actually get them results. Dave Tate has said this numerous times. I completely agree. People don't hire you for that top 1% knowledge that you know about this one tiny thing. They hire you about the general knowledge that you know that's already above what they already know. The people that get to charge the Boku bucks and super specialize on this one really little niche thing. Think about Eric Cressy, fantastic example. That dude knows more about the freaking shoulder than probably some shoulder physicians. I would not be surprised when it comes to the baseball population. That dude could go back to school and probably become a shoulder surgeon in, I feel like, 6 months. Because he's just that knowledgeable about the shoulder and how it works for baseball. It would just be a matter of him doing the stuff that he has to do to show that he's competent enough to actually do the surgery. On a knowledge-based front, the bro is already there. He's got it. Eric Cressy is the man when it comes to shoulders and baseball. I would send anybody that I would ever meet that has shoulder issues that throws a baseball to Eric without even hesitation. Wouldn't even think twice about it. Right. So that's why he gets paid the Boku bucks for that, because he is the guy, right? Or Dr. Stuart McGill, same kind of thing. He gets paid a lot because he has his expertise in this one very small niche area of low back pain and all the research that he's done on it. So just remember that you know more than your clients need you to know to get them the results. End of story. Guarantee you do. The imposter syndrome generally spikes in two situations. The first one is going to be when you're around more experienced trainers and coaches and you begin to compare your beginning to where they currently are. That's just going to happen, but somebody that's logged the years of experience should be better, is going to look better, is going to be more knowledgeable, is going to be answer questions. Looks like it's just more natural because it is. They've got more experience. And number two is when a client asks you something that you don't know. So for the first situation, remember that every expert at one point in any career was a beginner. And the trainer or coach with 10 years of experience had their first month, 2-3 months of training people just like you. Your job isn't to be them. Your job is to be the best version of you. Learn from their mistakes they happen to pass on. And that should theoretically make you better than they were when they were at your point. That's ideally how you know you found a good mentor. If you're 2 years in, 3 years in, and you're further than your boss was at 2 years in, 3 years in, chances are you've got a good boss. If you're at the same point or worse than they were, you probably got a shitty boss or mentor in this case. So the second situation, you have to reframe this. Not knowing something isn't evidence that you're a fraud or you're an idiot. It's actually proof that you're actively trying to learn. So the appropriate response is curiosity, not necessarily shame. Again, going back to saying, that's a great question. I want to make sure I can provide you accurate information, or I can get you that information. So let me look into it and get back to you. I'll text you. I'll email you. I'll phone call you with what I find out. What actually helps you in these situations is action. The more sessions that you perform, that you lead, that you train people, the more clients that you help, the more problems that you solve, and the more evidence that you accumulate that you can, in fact, do this thing and do it well, the better off that you're going to be. Something that really needs to talk about, and I'll admit this is not my strong suit. I could probably take some improvements here myself. But the psychological challenge of the energy needed to train people, just in general, but especially the first couple months once you get going, because personal training is emotionally and physically demanding. You're not necessarily just demonstrating the exercises. For most of us, that should be relatively easy. But you're encouraging and motivating people. You're problem solving on the fly. You're managing different personalities. That is a huge one that can really drain you. You're performing these for hours at a time, and you've always got to be on. You can't be walking around with a shitty attitude and expect that to let people want to come pay to work with you, right? You've got to. They say fake it till you make it. You've got to fake it a lot when it comes to actually training people, because you're basically a living, breathing, walking advertisement board for your services. and they're there for an experience, you have to give them the best experience you can, the best customer service possible. Most new trainers burn out because they haven't learned how to manage this energy over the long haul. So some practical strategies. First, build natural recovery or down part during your day if you can. If you've got back-to-back sessions, try to do your best to protect a few minutes between them just for yourself. Get you a drink, get you a quick snack, take a breath, put your feet up for a couple minutes. Just veg out if you can. It's not always going to happen, but if you get those opportunities, you need to take them. I know you think you're going to be doing stuff every single minute. If you get 5 minutes between clients, you should take it. 100%. Number two is going to be protecting your sleep. Definitely something I can improve on myself, especially recently. This week has been a little rough. This should be basically a non-negotiable if you possibly can. Early morning sessions mean that you're going to have to try to get to bed earlier than probably the average person. Your clients deserve you trying to be fully present, awake, giving your most energy that you can. And you can't be present when you're exhausted. You are going to, however, on that same front, learn how to operate on lower sleep at times. It's just going to happen. It is the unfortunate nature of our business. You want to do your best to protect your sleep. You may have to learn how to get power naps, how to maximize your sleep to the most that you possibly can in terms of your sleep hygiene. I preach sleep on a lot of things. And the reason I preach is because I'm not great at it. I have a hard time winding down. And I'm a high stim guy. And I do a lot of stuff. I wear a lot of hats now. And it is hard for me to wind down at night. So, you know, like a 6 hour night for me is during the week is considered like a pretty good night. You know, I have some nights where it's 4 or 5 and I might get another night where maybe I get 7. So, but I think especially for beginning trainers and those that are newer, do your best to protect your sleep as much as you can. Number three, something I'm really passionate about, especially just in general in life, but especially with the personal training and coaching aspect, is learning to maintain boundaries. You care about your clients. There's no question about that. You will be able to demonstrate that very clearly, but you can't be available 24/7. You have to set expectations about response times for your messages. You have to have a clear policy about last minute cancellations. Don't let them constantly reschedule at your expense. Your time is valuable too. And if they're hiring you to work with them and they say they're going to be somewhere and they agree to a cancellation policy or a no-show policy or whatever policy that is, they agree to that, they sign that, you actually talk to them about it, then you need to uphold that. I will admit, I'm usually okay given the good old Spider-Man, everybody gets one. Shit happens. Shit happens all the time. Shit happens to me. Shit happens to you. It's going to happen in life. That is life. We're adults. Nobody's perfect. So giving somebody a one freebie, you can even have that in your paperwork, that they're going to get a one freebie every 6 months or 12 months or however you want your paperwork to say that. But don't let someone walk all over you, okay? Someone texts you about training on a Saturday and you're with your family. Don't be hesitant to just have it send a reminder email or text message. Hey, just a reminder, I'm on my own time. I'm doing something with my family. If you can, please reach out to me on Monday. I'll be happy to help you back with this when the week gets started. Okay? It's that simple. I've been very, very big on this since I've had a kid, really trying to let people understand that, hey, you don't text me when it comes to my training stuff. I don't care. We have a system in place via email and a phone call. Send an email or phone call. Do not text me. So learn to maintain your boundaries early. Be strict on them. Do not budge on them, especially when it comes to your personal time, because people will abuse it. Number four, do activities outside of training that actually fill up your cup. The gym can be your entire world if you let it, and I can live and breathe with this. I feel like this week I've already logged like 50 hours and not even a Friday. Make sure that you have interests, relationships, activities, hobbies that have nothing to do with fitness if you can. That way you can actually bring your best to work. You're excited to do it because you're passionate about it. But at the same time, on the weekend, you can go do stuff and actually have a good time and not be thinking about what's going on at the gym or what's going on with your clients. You just don't care about them. But you're not thinking about Judy's weight loss, okay? You'll deal with Judy's weight loss when you see her on Monday morning, right? That will all be there. Find those things that stimulate you, make you happy outside of the gym, and I promise your balance will be so much better. so much better. I'll be honest, it's one of the main reasons why I have the sports car that I have. I love driving that car. It makes me thrilled. I forget about a lot of stuff by rowing and throwing gears in my sports car. Same thing whenever I go to Purdue sporting event. Same thing. I completely check out. I don't think about other stuff. That's where I like to be, okay? So those finding those things are incredibly important for your balance. Now let's take some key takeaways here, close this out, some non-negotiables. Let me leave you what I'm going to just call them non-negotiables, I guess. Number one, show up consistently and professionally. Do the simple shit. Be on time. Be prepared. Be present. It sounds very basic, but reliability is rare and valuable, especially I feel like as time has gone on, I'm not going to be like, oh, them damn kids, but doing the basic stuff and the simple stuff exceptionally well can immediately get your foot in the door to a lot of places over other people. Number two is putting that client's experience above everything else for that time that you're with them to the best of your ability. Everybody's going to have their days. And maybe if you're having a bad day, okay, if you are having a bad day, be honest with them. Hey, I'm having a shitty day. I literally had this conversation the other day with a client. Hey, I barely got 4 hours of sleep. I am struggling this morning. Be honest with you. I'm struggling. I got a long day. Just being honest with you. Happy to be here, but I'm just not feeling it today. That's okay. They're human. They're going to understand. As long as you're not like that every day, everything's going to be fine. But otherwise, you do want to do your best to put the client experience above everything else. Every decision you should make should be filtering through that question. Does this make things better for this person that I'm working with? Number three is to stay humble and curious. We don't know everything. Doesn't matter. I've been training people for a long time and I still don't know everything. You will not know everything. It's going to be impossible. So the best trainers, coaches are permanent students of their game. Always remember that. Always trying to figure out how you can get a little bit better at something in your personal training or coaching game. There's always something that you can constantly be improving upon. Number four is building relationships, but not just with the clients. Connect, obviously, with your clients, but also if they happen to have friends or family members, trying to tap into that potential. Maybe it's with the staff that you're working with the other gym. Maybe it's the other members at the gym. Maybe it's other trainers outside of the gym that you're meeting in the industry, going to seminars and stuff. Build relationships there. This is a relationship business. If you, especially like the outside world, I will say meeting the people I've met and the connections I've been able to have in the fitness and strength conditioning room has done wonders for me because people will recommend me and I will recommend them. And that goes a long way whenever you can establish those connections. That helps each other. You're riding off each other's backs and you're going to bat for each other, especially if you're not competing in the same market because we know there's nothing to lose, right? We're just helping each other the best we can. I love just the other day, somebody said, hey, I'm driving through to go into someplace. Where's a gym that I can sign up and train? And I had two people tag me because they recommended our gym. Now, I don't know if they're going to swing by, but that's the kind of stuff that you want. And that's all starts on fostering and building relationships, even outside of the actual client relationship. Number five is to track as much as you possibly can. If you have to track your sessions old school, do that. If you have to track your clients old school, do that. But on top of that, their weights, their sets, reps, how you're doing your programming, that should all be tracked. You should kind of have a good idea of what your retention is. You should know your monthly income. You can't improve what you aren't tracking and aren't measuring. Number six is going to be invest in yourself. Keep learning like we've talked about in terms of staying humble and curious and improving your education knowledge. That's for sure. But also take care of your health. Stay fit, stay healthy, stay active. Manage your energy well. You can't pour from an empty cup. So invest in yourself physically, holistically, as much as educationally. Number seven, you always want to think long-term. Always be thinking long-term. People get too caught up of this little thing right here, the carrot in front of them. Think about what's way in front of that carrot. The decisions that you make earlier on in your training career, but also just as you're making these small decisions every single day, you think about how that affects the long run game, and then you're laying that foundation for a better career, better establishment. It's going to build momentum, and you want to build it intentionally. There's what I want you to remember when you're training people. If you're having to be working with clients, maybe you're nervous. Maybe you're new at this whole personal training thing. Maybe you're experiencing, you're just like, yeah, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. Good. That's the way it should be. That you can be cut out for this if you bring the right stuff forward. The fact that you're, one, listening to this episode, that tells me that you're already trying to prepare and or you're trying to find a way to level up your personal training, and I hope this episode can help do that for you. It shows you enough that you care enough to learn and be better. And I think that already sets you apart and tells me a lot about you as an individual, so I appreciate you being around for the episode. In that case, do me a favor, leave a 5-star review, hit the like button on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe over on YouTube if you're not already, you can find the episode here. But also, most people that get into personal training don't just take it seriously enough. They think the certification is all they need or that degree, and they're going to do it part-time, and I'll make some side hustle bucks, and it will kind of just come over time. And that's not the way that works, okay? This is the starting line, so to speak, of taking this stuff seriously, and that's what will actually accumulate the growth that you want to find. Your first months will always be hard, no matter what you do in any career, but especially personal training. You got to market yourself. We didn't even go into the marketing side. I didn't want to cover that on this episode because you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have sessions that don't go well. You're going to have moments of doubt, and that's all part of the process. It's all part of the process, no matter how long you've been doing this, whether you're new or experienced. But if you approach your initial time that you're starting, those first 90 days, with intention, humility, genuine desire to help people and improve, you'll come out of the other side of this doing just fine. Not just as a trainer or a coach, but doing this professionally. And the fitness industry needs awesome trainers. It needs people who care, are competent, treat their clients with respect, and deliver real results. And that can be you. You can do that. I'm hoping that this episode motivates you to do that and to be better at that. So if this episode helped you, share it with another trainer coach who's either just starting out, somebody you know, maybe an intern. Share it with an experienced coach or trainer. Maybe you can share it with your staff. You're really just trying to find a way to light things up, get things going. It will really ultimately help you. And at the end of the day, if you happen to share it with them, it lets me connect. Please feel free to connect with me as well. I would really appreciate it. If you happen to want to go deeper into like the programming, business building, or any aspect of becoming a better trainer or coach, hit that subscribe button over on YouTube. Again, I really appreciate that. I drop new content every single week, not only on just the podcast side, but in terms of visual stuff as well. I've always got more stuff down the pipeline. And I really appreciate you being on here for today's episode. So until next time, keep going. I really appreciate you tuning in for today's episode, and I'll talk to you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at The Smitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.